And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, March the 2nd, 2016, 12:10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, coming up on 12:11. It is the day after Super Tuesday. Hope everybody got their fix of election coverage last night, and it was quite amazing for a gentleman last night named Donald Trump, who apparently has taken quite a lead in the Republican primary and may be on his way to the White House. We'll have to watch and see. There's a debate coming up on Fox News on Thursday night. But during today's program, we've got a lot of very interesting things planned. Coming up next hour, 1:10 to 2 p.m., we're going to be joined by 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, via telephone, to discuss her thoughts on the primary last night, as well as Martha Dowse Manasi remembering her sister, Grace Mack, who passed away this week at the age of 92. But this hour, we're going to talk about something very important with one of my favorite people. He has been in the news business, he has been in the entertainment business longer than anybody I can think of. He recently celebrated a birthday on Valentine's Day. From the Today Show to the Tonight Show to 2020, he is also from Ohio, which we like. One of my favorite people, Hugh Downs. Mr. Downs, how are you?
I am fine, thank you. How are you?
Always good to hear from you.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. You, I want to read this quote for people who didn't hear it, and it's the main reason I wanted to have you on today. Donald Trump, the man who after last night looks like he's on his way to the Republican nomination, made a comment last week about your and my business, the broadcasting business, that I thought was very interesting, and here's how it goes. Donald Trump said Friday that if elected president, he will change the nation's libel laws in order to make it easier to sue news organizations. One of the things I'm going to do if I win, I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money, Trump said during a rally in Fort Worth, Texas. We're going to open up those libel laws so when the New York Times writes a hit piece, which is a total disgrace, or when the Washington Post, which is there for no other reason than to write a hit piece, we can sue them and win money instead of having no chance of winning because they're totally protected, he said. We're going to open up libel laws and we're going to have people sue you like you've never got sued before. By the way, no federal libel law currently exists because libel suits are handled in state courts. But since 1964, when the Supreme Court ruled that in the case, New York Times versus Sullivan, public individuals who wish to sue media companies for libel are required to prove that the news organization knowingly published false information with malicious intent. So, you, have you ever seen anything like this in your time?
No, and at one time I might have called it the dumbest thing I've ever heard of, but I think it's one of the most evil things I've heard of. I can't imagine that. Obviously, there's an awful lot of people who pay attention to Donald Trump, and you're right. He may win he may become the standard bearer for the Republican Party. I think responsible Republicans feel very uneasy about that because he's already almost ruined the party. And he's going to plow right on until he has ruined it, and I don't like to see that happen. I'm not a Republican, but I hate to see the party destroyed that way. And at one time I would have called it kind of a comical thing, but it is a truly evil idea what he wants to put down so loudly.
You know, Hugh, there is not a week that goes by that we do not do a Donald Trump story because you can't cover it. And in the beginning, I thought it was a joke. I thought it was laughable.
And me too.
I thought, okay, this will pass. It's an aberration. But it's not an aberration.
No.
And why is that?
Well, it's not an aberration because now there is a possibility that he'll become the standard bearer for that party, and having ruined the party, there is a possibility that he could be elected. Worse things have happened to this nation, and it would be a nasty bump, I think, and very hard for us to get over. But we would get over it. As you may guess, I'm an optimist. And I think we would survive such a thing, but I hate to see it because it shows a total misunderstanding, lack of understanding of why the laws are set up the way they are. And I just hate to see him get away with it, but it's possible that he will.
You know, primary elections have tended to get a little sharp-elbowed, but this one, I've never seen anything like it, to where Marco Rubio yesterday called Donald Trump a con man. And, I mean, how can they dial that back in a few months when we go into the main election?
You're right. No, they're not going to be able to. I don't know. It's a weird time, I think, that we're living through. I don't despair about it. I'm very sad about it, but I think it's something we will weather. And it's a big bump in the road, as far as I'm concerned.
What is it about Donald Trump that allows him to call women fat pigs, make fun of a Vietnam veteran, John McCain, call him a loser, attack the media, attack the Pope, call the Pope disgraceful, and yet win like nobody's business last night?
Well, you know, that's a funny thing. Voters, a lot of people who vote, who do vote, often are voting for a single cause, you know, like whether it's abortion or whether it's the weather, you know, the heating up of the earth, or whether any single cause. They are so on fire to believe that if their cause is corrected, that will be, from there on, it'll be just daisies. It'll be wonderful. And that's not the case. And for people to get a look at the overview of the whole thing, I think you'd have to say, yes, there's a possibility that that could happen. And I'd hate to see it happen for a number of reasons, one of which is I just don't like to see we have a two-party system, and I hate to see one party just virtually destroyed, as is now happening.
You know, it's an interesting topic, Hugh. For people who are Republicans out there, because it's even strange. I have been watching television pretty close the last couple days and reading newspapers, and about 50% of the Republicans, and I've never heard this before, when the interviewer will say to them, if Donald Trump ends up being the Republican nominee, will you vote for him? And Republicans are saying, no. I can't imagine. Well, does that mean they vote for Hillary or they don't vote?
Yes, that's very true. And I always have a question for them. As a rule, if I run into an intelligent person like that, who's a Republican, who has said that he would jump the party or whatever, I itch to ask him, why are you a Republican? You know, it's just something that kind of puzzles me. But I'm glad that there are Republicans who can do that and not allow our two-party system to go right into the dustbin. And that would be very bad, because that would be it wouldn't result in anarchy. It would result in a strong man type of dictatorial thing, and that would be a very bad thing. It might be impossible to come out from under that if they ever got a hold like that. So I'm hopeful that they will not be able to really ruin the party, but it looks like they really are trying.
If you're a good Republican, if you are Mitch McConnell, if you are Paul Ryan, if you are Bob Dole, if you are these people, what do you do right now to save the party?
Well, you know, I don't know. There was a time when Biden had some really good ideas, with personal tragedies slowed him up a lot. And I think that some of them are saying things. Barbara Bush was on recently, and Herbert Walker Bush is still alive, and apparently his mind is working all right, but he's not well. That is a fact. And he had some good ideas, I thought. And but again, I was wondering about, and then his, you know, the family quarrel about whether Jeb or George W. would be run for office was it's because George W. was older, but the family felt Jeb was the more intellectual one, and George W. threw a fit, and because he was older, and managed to get elected. So that kind of thing, that was a nasty setback for a while. But we survived it. I think we'll survive all of these things that are bad. But I'd hate to see something that would result in a single strong man in charge. That would take a little time to get out from under, and we might never be able to restore the kind of a democracy that we have in this country.
You know, I'm not quite sure about this, Hugh. I want to get your read on this. Will Donald Trump getting the Republican nomination, now, will that elect Hillary Clinton for sure, or will that destroy the Republican Party forever? Which
you know, that's a very interesting thing. It might be that that he is Hillary's best friend. I don't know. What he has done really has strengthened her position, I think. And she's pretty cool about the whole thing. She's been there and done that, and I think she gets stronger all the time. So I don't think there's a disaster at hand, but it is possible that that Trump could be the standard bearer for his party, and having ruined it, it would be a very dreary ending. But and it disturbs me a bit. But we'll just have to see what happens. I can't predict.
You, before we talk about what he said about the media, I do want to play this clip from CNN on Sunday, because I think it was one of the maybe most amazing clips I've ever seen on cable television news. This is CNN. This is, I believe, Jake Tapper interviewing Donald Trump Sunday on CNN. This is live as it happens. No video or audio editing.
Condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists in this election?
Well, just so you understand, I don't know anything about David Duke, okay? I don't know anything about what you're even talking about with white supremacy or white supremacists. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Did he endorse me or what's going on? Because, you know, I know nothing about David Duke. I know nothing about white supremacists. And so you're asking me a question that I'm supposed to be talking about people that I know nothing about.
But I guess the question from the Anti-Defamation League is, even if you don't know about their endorsement, there are these groups and individuals endorsing you, would you just say unequivocally you condemn them and you don't want their support?
Well, I have to look at the group. I mean, I don't know what group you're talking about. You wouldn't want me to condemn a group that I know nothing about. I'd have to look. If you would send me a list of the groups, I will do research on them, and certainly I would disavow if I thought there was something wrong. But you may have groups in there that are totally fine, and it would be very unfair. So give me a list of the groups, and I'll let you know.
Okay. I mean, I'm just talking about David Duke and the Ku Klux Klan here, but...
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know David Duke. I don't believe I've ever met him. I'm pretty sure I didn't meet him, and I just don't know anything about him.
And that was this past Sunday. You, and just for the record, Donald Trump did disavow the next day, but what do you make of that?
I think it showed enormous bigotry that he didn't instantly condemn white supremacy. To say he knew nothing about it, I mean, he should have been jumped in with both feet instantly, and he didn't. And that just shows that he is, among other things, a bigot.
And that being said, you, we all saw it. It was on cable, CNN, all over the world. 3 days later, the man wins more primaries than anybody else. What is going on?
Yeah. Well, that's the climate. And that does happen from time to time, and it disturbs me, but it doesn't dismay me.
So what is the reason you can best figure that he is so popular?
Well, the reason, convince what?
That Trump is so popular.
I don't know. He's a loudmouth. The fact that he didn't instantly condemn white supremacy made some responsible Republicans claim they would jump the party, you know, if he got the nomination. But it's amazing that a lot of people who focus only on their own particular cause that escapes them, or they don't care, and they should. And not to instantly condemn white supremacy is just unthinkable to me. And I can't imagine I can't imagine why he could override that just by being a loudmouth.
Somebody said the other day to me that in the last 2 weeks, Donald Trump, this man, has not condemned white supremacy. Now, he did, for all the Donald Trump fans, he did disavow the next day, but in that interview, he did not. And he did call the Pope disgraceful. Now, that being said, is this a backlash to 8 years of President Obama? Because we have all said that some of the criticism of President Obama is derived from racism. Is this a backlash? Is this a way to get back?
Well, are you saying that there's a belief that that some of the Obama's actions are due to race relations?
Yeah,
or that he feels that something is that he feels that his being half black is something that's being used against him? I think he just ignored the whole thing.
Right. I think Obama ignored the whole thing, but is this a backlash to that for people who for 8 years have had that racist overtone to be obstructionist to President Obama? Is that why Donald Trump's popular?
I don't know. My personal feeling is that I don't know the percentages, but I feel the percentages of people for whom race is an issue is pretty small, really. They don't pay that much attention to it. But those who do pay attention to it are somehow on fire to do things that will betray the fact that they are. I just cannot conceive of how Trump could say that he'd have to look it up, because he couldn't say one way or the other until he did some research on it.
Well,
that is without the fact that he didn't jump in with both feet to condemn white supremacy just shows a monstrous bigotry.
Well, the interesting thing about that, I watched that little 2-minute piece of videotape, and you know it is possible. I guess. I mean, I knew who David Duke was. I'm sure you did, but. Okay, let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he did not know who David Duke was. But even after that question, the interviewer said he's the leader of white supremacy groups. As soon as that word came out, how could you not know?
Yeah, how could you not know? That's a big question. And that to me is just it just shows a thing about Trump that usually shows up on Twitter and that kind of thing more than it does on what he may carefully say, even as loud as he does say it, on general television. But there's just no doubt in my mind of what that spells out if he has to look it up. If he has to look up, it'd almost be like, if somebody introduced a bill to reestablish slavery, you know, black slavery, that you'd have to do research on that as to whether it was something we would want. It turns out that way with Trump. I've always said he's an empty suit, but I'm afraid now that he has made he may be Hillary's best friend. I don't know. I can't imagine. The American voter, to me, is not a person who just focuses on his own cause. To me, the American voter is the people who stood in line, long lines in the dark and the rain, twice to vote for the President of the United States, and they vote in the White House a man who was half black. That shows that race is not the issue that some people think it is. I don't think that's something that we should worry about. And if there is a racial bigot, generally he's just stamped out right away. And that should happen to Trump.
Somebody pointed out the other day to me as well, after that comment, the man who is leading the party, who will probably be the nominee for that party is the party of Abraham Lincoln. that made those comments.
Oh, sure. Evolution, political evolution is amazing because Abraham Lincoln's party was the Liberal Party. You know, that's what the Republicans were. And they were better than the other, all the other, you know, the Whigs and the Tories and the vegetarians, and there was all kinds of parties, but it took a pretty big whack to knock down one of the important parties, which was the Republicans, and I think he's virtually badly damaged at least the Republican Party. And now there's a chance that he may be representing the Republican Party at the elections.
On the opposite side of that, why can't the Republicans who are more in the vein of Republicans today, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, John Kasich, why can't they get any traction out there?
What they need to do is to get together and say, look, let's quit quarreling with each other. And let's get something together that we can agree on. We can start with an extreme, for example. We can agree that the sun is going to rise tomorrow in the east. And I don't think anybody would try to question that. And then you start, a little seed of agreement will allow them then to look at the whole picture and quit fighting with each other and come up with a policy that might be usable and have some opposition to the Democrats. Right now, that isn't the case.
No, it's not the case. And have we gotten past the point where we have run out of time where they can do that?
I don't know. That's very interesting. I don't know that we would. Well, I was reminded while I was talking of one of the things that Obama did. He got congressional members, Republican and Democrat, together to start discussing things that they could agree on and that they could act on later. And I don't think it yielded an awful lot of fruit, because one of the things that this Congress has sought to do is to reduce to ashes anything that Obama has come up with. That kind of hatred is almost unbelievable. At one time, when there was the Congress wanted to dispose of something that Obama approved of, and they did, and Obama changed his mind. He said, "I've been thinking about that, and I think that they're right." And the Congress instantly reversed itself because it didn't want to do anything that made him look right. That was kind of amusing, but it also was kind of sad.
When I talk to people about Trump, they say, "We like him." I say, "Why do you like him?" They say, "Because he tells it like it is."
Yeah. That is their belief that that's the case shows an ignorance that is really sad.
And is that just apoplectic of the times, or is that just temporary insanity?
No, it's not the times. It is kind of temporary stupidity, one would hope, because it kind of amounts to that more than anything else. And again, I haven't seen any figures. I have no fact investigations that show what the percentage is of people who are favoring him. There are polls that do show that, and there are caucuses and that kind of thing. They're showing an awful lot of what I would call temporary, I hope, stupidity, and not all evil people who are trying to do damage to the country.
You know, one of the other hosts here at the station this morning, we were talking off the air, and he said something very interesting. Where are the third party candidates? Where are the libertarian candidates?
Yeah. You know, where are they? And, well, maybe they're at a point where they don't want to try just to focus on their thing. They're looking at a broader picture. And there was a time when all politics, national politics were all local politics. That's what they said of it. That has reversed itself now, because now any politics that are local have become national instantly by being published. And being published means not just in print. you're published, if you've gone public and you're floating around in cyberspace with those facts that you can't call back.
When we talk about Trump and wanting to lift the libel laws, do you think that's a possibility when it comes to the media if he's elected?
Well, yes, it's a possibility, but unless the Congress has really lost its mind, it's never going to happen. He will say that does because, and he may not even try it if he ever got in the White House. Oh God, bite my tongue! I shouldn't even think that. But there's a possibility that he could be in the White House, and he would never get away with some of the nonsense that he spouts out. There is no Congress bad enough to allow that to happen.
There is such an antipathy, though, it seems, from Washington, D.C., more from the Republicans, but there are some Democrats as well, against the media, that the media is a horrible thing that should not be there. You know, if something like this would happen, I mean, would it be the end of the media as we know it?
Well, I tell you, the media, there's a lot to blame the media with, I think. There's always, if you can get better circulation or better commercial time, then you're going to kind of tilt things the way that that they are, and you're not going to, unless you're a really good reporter, and then you're not going to report anything that you don't really believe or know to be true. But media is guilty of certain things. I think that they're taking a bigger beating than they ought to have, because media is, well, I, for one thing, I wouldn't condemn it on grounds that it was the basis of my career from the time I was 17 to 1999 when I formally retired. Media is what I've worked through, and I do feel I know what the good points and bad points are. I just don't know the percentages the way I'd like to, and I should look it up.
You know, something very interesting, and this was a quote from Donald Trump, and I thought it was a very interesting quote in that whole story about him trying to get the libel suits out of the, make them stronger, easier to hit the media with. He said, "I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles." Now, he does put the word false in there, but purposely negative and horrible. Now, doesn't that put Fox News and MSNBC out of business?
Well, you think it might. And if he is, if he did make it to the White House, and I should quit talking that way because it's an unthinkable thought, he would not be able to do what he says he would do. And because to do that and to undercut those laws that protect our accuracy in reporting would be an awful thing to do. And I don't think he'd get away with it, but it has an appeal to voters who are just focused on small things and not looking at the big picture.
When he says purposely negative and horrible, now we all understand what false means, and I don't think anybody in the media, well, I used to be able to say that, but tries to put out a false story. But when he says negative and horrible, now, I think Edward R. Murrow, who so many people consider the patron saint of modern journalism, now, when he did the story on Joe McCarthy, now, I guarantee you that Joe McCarthy thought that was purposely negative and horrible. Now, if we had no libel suits, Murrow, or if we had heavy-duty libel suits, if the media wasn't protected, they could be sued. Because a lot of things people take negatively, and they do have a negative effect. Had a negative effect on McCarthy, but as they should have.
Sure. I don't know. That was an interesting thing, because there was a time when McCarthy was so strong that you didn't want, and I got to admit, I used to take the elevator train to work in the Merchandise Mart in Chicago when I was there, and I was at that time reading the great books of the Western world, and one of them was Karl Marx's thing on communism, to establish what communism really was. I had that book in a brown paper wrapper. I didn't want anybody to see me reading it, because I knew people whose careers were ruined by the fact that they were accused of being communist. And I thought, if I had a book on Adolf Hitler's life, Mein Kampf was Adolf Hitler's biography, I could be reading that out in the open, and nobody would think, hey, that guy must be a Nazi. You know, they wouldn't think that way. But communism had us so by the throat that we were terrified. And it was a time when it was a strong feeling that if you bucked Joe McCarthy, this was before Edward R. Murrow, he could destroy you. And finally, he was destroyed, believe it or not, by Jack Parr.
Absolutely.
And that was that really, and I was on that program, and I thought, my God, Parr has just committed suicide. And it really was McCarthy that committed suicide, I guess, because that was the end of him. And I thought, well, there's the power of television.
Well, for people who don't remember, and this is very important, Jack Parr was the host of the Tonight Show before Johnny Carson. Hugh Downs was his announcer. And not only was it Joe McCarthy, it was Walter Winchell, who also could end your career in a moment.
That's right. Winchell was an interesting guy, because I had him on one time to do the Nathan, what was the name of the sports writer that had established a foundation to do a lot of good to humanity. It was a very worthwhile thing. And what was his name? Nathan something. And Walter Winchell was a guest on my program. It was in the daytime. And he said, when I thanked him for running this foundation, and he said, well, don't send the money to Nathan or whatever his name is, I forgot. Send it to me, because they don't know who he was. And then when he went out, when we finished, I led him out to the curb to get a cab, which he wanted, and he, before the cab came, a drunk approached him and looked at him and said, you're Walter Winchell, aren't you? And Winchell decked him right down into the sewer, and the cab rolled up, and Winchell got in and went away. That's the kind of a guy Winchell was.
Now that's
I was not very happy in his presence.
That's an inside story. And this is interesting, and I was thinking about this morning as well. There were some greats in broadcast journalism in the 50s and 60s. Walter Cronkite and Edward Murrow and Eric Severide and John Chancellor. And it's a shame if people forgotten John Chancellor, because he was great. But Hugh Downs was there too, 1960s, Today's Show. And you, of that generation, you are, for our benefit, the last one left, thank goodness.
I think I am the last one left. And every now and then I want to get to, there is one guy, I really enjoy talking to him, because he'll be, this September, he'll be 100. And he's the only living four-star general in our hemisphere, northern hemisphere, actually. And it's a joy talking to him, because he knows what I'm talking about. And most of the people I'm talking about, whether it's a generation back or two generations back, or the nieces and nephews, they're no good, because they don't know anything about the years that I would like to have more conversations about. But the general is a really good guy. He was a flyer in World War II, and I enjoy talking with him, because he knows what I'm talking about.
Well, it's interesting, you, because of that. Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of your contemporaries left that you can talk with, but you worked with these people. What would your group, your contemporaries, think of a Donald Trump and the media of 2016?
What was the what of them?
What would your news contemporaries back in the 60s think of a Donald Trump and the news of 2016?
Oh, they'd be appalled. I think so. I'm just haunted by that idea that he would get on the air and say that he'd have to look. He didn't know anything about that. He'd have to look it up. When he was asked about why he didn't, immediately condemned supremacy is just unbelievable. But that's the kind of a guy he is, and a lot of people betray themselves in the Twitters and but this was out in the open that he said that, which just shows that he didn't want to offend people who were bigots because he felt they were votes, I suppose. No. And he didn't have any stand on that.
Something I have not heard anybody pick up on is this, and tell me what you think on this. You give me your read on this. In the presidential elections, and those are the elections that most people turn out for, but still in this country, it ranges between 24% and 28%. Even when the biggest groups turn out for presidential elections to vote, 28% at the most. Now, what I'm noticing is, and they keep saying it, and I must believe it, more Republicans are turning out to vote than ever before. Record numbers of Republicans are turning out. Now, yeah, we've always...
There's a reason for that.
And this is what
they got so many candidates. It looked like it would be easy to seize it, because the number was kind of ruining the party, but it was giving a better chance of getting the nomination than they would have if they were alone, and I think that was one of the reasons. And the more that were in there with their hat in the ring, the more it seemed possible that they could make headway. And you know, Jeb Bush had an awful lot of money behind him, and it didn't make any difference.
Well, this is the interesting thing, because we've always complained. We said, how can it be that only one out of four people are turning out to vote? Was it the fact that one out of four people was actually interested and informed, and this group that's turning out now, unfortunately, is not informed, and that's why Trump can get away with that and still win?
I think that's true. That's absolutely true. Taking for granted what we've got is really sad when you think of it, that we've got something that never existed in the world before, really, you know, the kind of democracy we have. And to preserve it, which the founding fathers went through hell to get it together the way it is, and to build a constitution, you know, that would support that. And now most of the people, even ardent voters for their cause, just take it for granted, and they think, oh well, we don't really have to vote because it may be raining outside. Or that kind of thing is quite appalling. In answer to your question, I think those people and the Lincoln Party, for example, would really be appalled by what they would look on if they follow the evolution of politics.
This also dawned on me this morning. I had a lot of epiphanies this morning, because after this Super Tuesday, it was hard not to. But I sit here in Ohio and do this show. You're an Ohio boy, spent a lot of time here in the news. The Republican convention, I don't know if people remember this year is going to be in Cleveland. Cleveland is a very liberal town, and you've got Donald Trump coming there, and they're talking about a brokered convention. You know, I'm not saying it's going to be a 68 Chicago Republican convention or Democratic convention, but boy, oh boy, there could be some heat up there in Cleveland in August.
There could. Isn't that interesting? There sure could. And then maybe I'd feel justified in saying Trump is an empty suit. But so far, it doesn't look like that's the direction it's going in. And manipulating the situation has led to a lot of mistakes, I think, on the part of all the minor parties instead of going ahead with putting their best foot forward. They just kind of give up and let it go, and they take everything for granted.
You at one time, you identified yourself as a libertarian. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, I think that's true. I was a guest on God, who was his show? He had a late night show, and I remember saying, I blurted it out, and I didn't think it would have any effect. I said, you know, well, all the good ideas are with the libertarians. And then I bit my tongue. I thought, oh God, I'm going to hear about that. But that was, at that time, it sort of fit to indicate that the very good ideas.
Are you a libertarian?
Stuck on me like a barnacle.
Are you a libertarian today?
No, I wasn't even then. But I said it for a reason, and it stuck on me.
What do you consider yourself a member of anything? I assume you vote. I'm sure you vote.
Yeah, I do.
But do you consider yourself a member of a party?
No, and the thing is, for a long time, decades ago. I did not want to make it a part to vote for a party. I wanted to vote for the individual. And the reason why, at the time when I was on the air with something like the Today Show, I don't think anybody tuned in knew whether I was a Republican or a Democrat, and there was a very sound reason for that. I didn't know. I wasn't voting for a party. I was voting for an individual. And then gradually I came to where I feel now I have to vote for a party. I don't want to, if I don't vote Democratic, I think I'm going to be letting down a curious situation that has to be dealt with, and therefore I've gone now to voting party.
In your time for the president you have voted for, who is the greatest president you've seen?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know. I think in some ways the smartest, most literate, and I immediately think of Dwight Eisenhower. He was great. And the other thing is, I also think the Clinton, Bill Clinton, you remember in his term in office, we had... his term in office ended with an overkill in the Treasury, and the national debt was down to zero. People forget that, but he was a really smart president. I think I liked Eisenhower because I don't know why. I think he was very intelligent. He made one statement that I thought was so profound. He warned us about the military-industrial
complex. Military-industrial complex.
Yeah, that's right. Military-industrial complex. He was, at that time, it seemed to me, the only person in or out of politics that saw that. And I did a long interview with him after he was no longer president. And we ran it for 4 days of the 5 days on Today Show. And I remember one of the things I asked him about, I said, what is there about not being president anymore that makes things different? And he said, a lot more people are beating me at golf. You think about that. That's sharply funny.
Now see, and that just shows the contemporaryism. Find me anybody in news today who interviewed Dwight Eisenhower.
You mean other people who interviewed
him? Yeah, I think it's just you. Because
it may be just me. You may be right. I don't know.
Well, you know, and Eisenhower, when you sat with Eisenhower, because the rap on him today, now you're somebody who talked with him. The rap on him was that he wasn't that smart and that he really didn't like Richard Nixon. What's your read on that from sitting with him?
Well, the second part is true. He really didn't like Richard Nixon, I think, for a reason. Richard Nixon, unfortunately, Richard Nixon worked for my wife's brother for a long time. And her brother finally fired him because Nixon was a lawyer. And John fired him because he didn't like his increasingly open attitudes toward liberalism and that whole picture, and got rid of him. But you know, if you have to say I'm not a crook, that sure means that you are a crook. You know, and that's why I think the second part of your question is true. He did not like Nixon. And that's about, I don't know the other facts, but...
Was he an intellect... Did you think he was a smart guy, sitting with him?
Who?
Eisenhower.
Eisenhower?
Yeah.
Smart is not by the right adjective. I think he was wise. I really do. I think he was a wise person. And I don't know what his IQ would have been, but that was never examined, I don't think. I don't think it ever is or ever is released by anybody who's been is president or is going to be an ex-president.
You know, I think the oldest people working in media today are probably still Barbara Walters and Larry King. Now, they both go back to Nixon. You go back to Eisenhower. You did talk with Kennedy, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I did. From the time he was a senator, on into when he was president.
Did you ever talk with Truman?
Johnson? Not until after he was no longer president. He used to take walks. And I remember I met him on a walk one time, and he had a cane. And I asked him why he used the cane. He said it's to hit reporters on the head who ask dumb questions. I got a kick out of that, but that was why he was carrying the cane.
Did you ever talk with Lyndon Johnson?
Not on the air. We were invited to a White House dinner one time, and I had a chance to talk to him at length there. And I think that's the only time I talked to him.
You know, we've only got 2 minutes left, and sometime we're going to have you back on and talk about these people you talked with, because once you're gone, which I don't think is going to be anytime soon, but once you're gone, these memories are going to be lost. I've never even seen that Eisenhower interview. I wonder if that still exists on videotape somewhere.
Probably not. I'll tell you why. A young vice president at NBC... decided to save money by not paying a warehouse for the... Then they had spools of film, you know, and dumped them all in the Hudson River, which is where they dump junk, you know.
What a thing.
And I couldn't believe that, because there were... At that time, there were museums of broadcasting in Chicago and New York that would have been... ecstatic to have that material, and they dumped them in the Hudson River, and I just thought that was almost as bad as the guy in Flint, Michigan, who saved money and let people drink poisoned water. That's one of the worst things that we've had in recent times.
I have 2 minutes and two questions, and they're both long balls here, so I'm just going to ask them quick. You anchored the assassination, or funeral of President John F. Kennedy for the Today Show.
We did. That's the only time it was on 7 days, because we were on the air on Saturday and Sunday.
Did you ever believe in the conspiracy theories? We had Abraham Bolden on, the first African-American Secret Service agent under John Kennedy. He said he thought there was a conspiracy. Did you ever think that?
Yeah, I do, and I'll tell you what's mystery to me is... It still is in doubt, unless the guy was extremely lucky or an unbelievably extremely accurate guy, to get in that kind of a rifle, to get two shots off at that distance, and then it just doesn't make sense to me. I think there was a conspiracy, and it's never been really resolved.
And my final question to you, and this is kind of interesting, because we did a whole show on this about a year ago. Last night, if you tuned into MSNBC, anchoring the broadcast, Brian Williams.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, that's interesting. Brian, it shows kind of a merciful tendency on the part of a network to hire him. Some of it has to do with having to pay off the rest of a network that he has. He has some pretty smart lawyers. And so they decided to give him something, and so they gave him a job, to do things that were kind of violent or horrible. I don't know why. And I had to smile when I saw that happen, but it shows it's different from the days when you got burned at the stake for making an error like that.
You, like I say, every time you're on, I'm in your debt. You are a fantastic person to talk to, and we've got to do that show on the presidents. Eisenhower, Truman, Johnson, it'd be great to know those little inside stories.
We'll do that sometime.
You are a fabulous person and a credit to Ohio, and like I say, I am forever in your debt for every time you come on. I look forward to it every time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, you.
Okay. See you soon.
Bye-bye. You Downs, legendary newsman. Stay tuned. Mary Ellen Withrow and Martha Douse Manasi right around the corner.
Dare you to bother me? I'm going to give you 72 hours to get out of my body. And if you're not, I'm going to roll on you.
The legendary newsman and former host of the Today Show, You Downs.